For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
And my name is Jay. So, folks, there's a moment in hockey history that I think doesn't entirely get enough attention or praise that it deserves. It's probably one of the more uttered lines in the underbelly of hockey fandom. You've heard it, I've heard it. And now it's been given its chance to shine. So, I'm sure most of you fine listeners out there are familiar with a little video game called Overwatch. It's filled with lots of our cartoonery and violence but more importantly, bonding for human beings. And, recently they, introduced a Summer Games update patch, DLC content, charging you more for the same thing. And in it was a update to a player called Zariah. And one eagle-eared, maybe not eagle-eyed, but eagle-eared hockey fan paid attention to the post-game breakdown of, like, you know, your kill count and kill ratio. And Zariah utters the phrase that I've been alluding to for, like, the last what seems like 30 minutes. It's only game. Why you have to be mad?
It's only game. Why you have to be mad?
So for the layman, that is, of course, Ilya Bryzgalov's immortal words when he was being interviewed when he was a member of the Anaheim Ducks. And the video is readily available online. Go watch it. It's really a Pulitzer-worthy interview. He's brutally honest. He's straightforward. And, you know, when it's in the summer months, it's minus 32 all winter. So just like this is a really neat cameo, Pete. And I'm really excited about it because now it's back into my everyday lexicon. So, you know, if I'm playing against you in NHL or anybody else, that's probably what I'm going to say for like the next couple of weeks. It's only game. Why you have to be mad?
Yeah, to get ready for this, I went back and I watched that interview again, and it has, I mean, obviously the line is iconic and really fun, but I love, like, kind of what happens after, is, like, the reporter starts to walk away, he's like, I'm not done yet,
you know? No, come back.
Yeah. Come back, I'm not done yet, you know, and, like, just this past year, I think it was Sportsnet, the Hockey Night in Canada people, they did for, what was it, for the draft where they had Bryzgalov there, and he was there, no, it was Free Agent Day, I'm sorry, so July 1st, and he was there in studio, and if you haven't, like, you have to go back and just watch a clip of all his things, because it's not even just the stuff he says. It's just his voice.
I want to welcome Ilya Bryzgalov aboard. And a funny moment a couple of seconds ago, Bryzgalov sits down, Armstrong turns him and says, I hate you. You want to explain why?
Well, no, I hated him because in 2009 at World Championships in Switzerland, we couldn't score on him in the final game, and they ended up beating us 2-1 to win. But you were a brick wall, right?
That's, yeah, like good. Usually.
good reason to hate him.
Like, his voice is, like, impossibly high-pitched. And then you realize that, like, that's just the way he talks. You know, yeah. It sounds like he's doing an impression of himself.
Yeah, that's what's funny about it because, like, again, his actual coming out party was the HBO 24/7 thing, you know, and, you know, killing time with death penalty, thinking about the universe. His voice is, like, so much deeper. In this one, it's like a little kid.
That's hockey, you know. It's only game. Why you have to do that?
I'd like to think that that's close to the octave that he's in.
He's a good guy.
And then he kind of levels off a little bit. But just, like, the incredulousness and the simplicity of him saying, like, it's only game. Why you have to be mad? You know, it's like the most, like, it's very true, but it's also, like, making fun of the person you're saying it to because you're still talking shit but you're like using facts to do it, right? Like,
right,
he's like,
yeah.
It is a game. You don't have to be mad, but look at it. You're mad, which means you're less than me. So that was pretty cool. Now, okay, so that's just like a cameo in a video game, right? And this is not mm-hmm. something new for the video game industry, Pete. You and I know this. They've had famous people do stuff before. For those of you who don't know, Elijah Wood did the voice for Spyro. Gary Oldman's been in a couple of Call of Duties. Liam Neeson was in Fallout 3. Barack Obama was in Mercenaries 2. But my favorite that I now equate this Brizgalov appearance with is Dennis Hopper from Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Because I kid you not, Dennis Hopper pulls off the greatest sleazy porn magnate, and it's all in a video game. But I didn't expect it, right? And you're like, this is Dennis Hopper? Really? And then like, I have to go watch back in all these films, right? And you're like, okay, so Dennis Hopper. Okay, all right, let's do this. And then, again, you know, I'm playing all these other video games and, you know, seeing a video game version of Barack Obama being able to climb up the nose of a tank and open up the hatch and fight over a grenade. And, you know, I'm glad that this is a thing, right? And what's nice is I'm glad that it's now like maybe a not – like you don't tell anybody you're doing it. Like most of that stuff, hey, you know, hey, by the way, the cast lists are voting and stuff. Nobody knew this until they discovered it. So, like, I am all for more great moments like, let's see, David Clarkson. Well, it's not your bottle. So what are you, the bottle police? I would love to find a way to inject that into a video game somewhere. Maybe – I don't know. Maybe a Patrick Waugh drop in a video game. So whatever I'm saying, I tried to hear Ronick speak, but I can't hear him because I have my two Stanley Cup rings plugging my ears. So there's definitely ground for ripe and fertile soil to interject and include great hockey sayings into our favorite video games. So Pete, what are your favorite cameos?
Well, I was taking a look before and some of the ones that you said came up, in addition to Dennis Hopper in the GTA series, in Vice City Stories, which I think was like a DLC or an add-on, they had Phil Collins was actually in the game, and he did a full performance of In the Air Tonight, where he played the drums and he sang, and you can watch the full performance. I think it's like 5 or 6 minutes. But so I found three that I thought were really great. And so in descending order, the first one is Street Fighter II. You can have Mikhail Gorbachev. Second would be NBA Jam. NBA Jam had a lot of hidden characters. One of the fun ones was that you could be Bill and Hillary Clinton. So obviously, politics aside, that's just kind of fun. You can also be Mortal Kombat characters.
That's right, because it's Midway. That's right.
Yeah.
They were part of the same group.
But my favorite one, and if you're listening, when you're done listening, you know, obviously, you know, keep listening. When you're done, go back to your computer and look this up on YouTube because it is worth watching. Fight Night Round 3. It's not a boxer, okay? But you can have a certain iconic figure as your trainer, and that figure is the Burger King. The Burger King will be your trainer, and if you remember the commercials with the kind of scary Burger King, the creepy Burger King, it's that guy. It's exactly that guy. You know, so imagine him in the corner, you know, in Rocky, and take out Mick. You got the Burger King in there. Pretty much what it is.
I remember they actually gave him his own video game. This is right around with like Xbox 360 came out, and they had all those like themed games, and there was Sneak King, and it was like, hey, you buy like a Happy Meal or something.
Oh yeah, I had that.
Or yeah, a kids meal, and then you get like an Xbox game, which seemed pretty revolutionary at the time. But then we're talking about a fast food franchise handing out video games that probably at best will last what, like an hour? You know,
yeah.
Like we're talking about hours. Oh, we're going to have hours and hours of content with the Burger King. Okay, sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I'm actually glad you brought up Fight Night because I totally forgot. There was and this ranks somewhere on my list, but it's not towards the top. But maybe it's one of my favorite video game moments. Was it took me by surprise, and it just totally played into the whole stereotype at the time. But Ready to Rumble round two, they had Michael Jackson as one of the fighters. And whenever he get hit, he would let out like the most high pitched, like "Oh, oh, oh, oh!" like I lost my mind because I was playing against my brother, and he was playing as Michael Jackson. So I was landing like these combos, just these rapid successions. He'd be like "Ah, oh, ah, oh!" And like just something about Michael Jackson involuntarily, like the idea that what, like you know how you and I like we get up off the couch for like, you know, like a nice. Just like either an exhale or when we sit down or when like we run into something, it's just like a ugh. But to know that for Michael Jackson, that's his screams are for everything. So if like he was sitting down, he'd be like, like he's trying to lift something heavy. He's like, all right, one, two, three. Oh, you know, like, that would be great. So I like that a bunch.
Yeah. So Jay and I wanted to connect this back to hockey, and we had an idea, but before we get to that, we got a mailbag question from EH41 in the like the Wingin' It Motown article mailbag, and so we're going to talk about that a little bit, and then we're going to transition into our idea because it's actually the perfect segue to get us into it. So the question was, it says NHL 19, I'm guessing they meant NHL 18 because that's the upcoming version, but anyway, in older versions of the game, there were iconic rosters with many of the greatest teams in NHL history. Many other sports games have done this. Why does NHL not give us these rosters even to play with in franchise mode? Now, before we even got this question, I think this past week, maybe even before, Jay and I were talking about this. We both remember playing with this. I think it might have been I have this feeling that it was back when there was a, you know, NHL 2K version. I'm pretty sure that it was a 2K version, at least the one that I played, and you could be older teams, not every single old team, but you could be like some of the classic teams, and you could play against, I forget if you could play against other people online, but I know you could definitely play offline against a computer, and I remember that being real fun. Do you remember that, Jay?
I do. I also remember that there was whenever the centennial celebration happened for the Canadians, one of the NHL, the EA NHLs, they had whatever the centennial roster for the Canadians, so that was like Maurice Richard, Ken Dryden, Patrick Waugh, all of your, like, the just all of the hallmark Canadians to ever wear the C. And there's something about, like, trying to build them. It was really nice to have that roster at your disposal if you were, like, creating, like, a dynasty team, because you'd be like, ah, geez, you know, I have a couple of holes to fill. Who do I pull from? Because I don't really want to, like, give anybody away and, like, make another team better just because I want to round this thing out. Oh, I'll just take one of the Hall of Fame players from the Canadiens. So, like, yeah, just a line of Maurice Richard, Pavel Datsyuk, and Guy Lafleur, right? Like, oh, yeah, sure, that'll totally work. Totally work. So,
So, I mean, the short answer to the mailbag question is that I really wish they would. I think that would be a lot of fun, you know, to play, you know, if we kind of combine what we talked about before, you know, that 3-on-3 would be fun to add some of these players. But we're going to use that to segue into the connection that we had for this, you know, coming off of this Brizgalov being featured in a game is, so let's say if you had the option to pretty much pull from any player, not a current player, right? So former players, if you could put together, you know, a video game team to play against another person, so the question is, what would your starting lineup look like? Now, when I was doing this, just before anybody gets mad at me for leaving people out, I decided not to go with what I thought was the greatest players, but what I thought would be a really fun team to play with. You know, so, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there's, like, hundreds of players we could have chosen from. So we're going to leave out a ton of players that would be, you know, fit on that team. So let's see. So let's start from the back. All right, so, Jay, who would your goalie be?
Ken Dryden. I am totally of the mind that Ken Dryden, Patrick Wadd first. Because everybody's like, oh, Patrick Wadd is such a young kid leading the team. No, Dryden did that, like, I think for his year, and anyone that called her as well. I think he's And then not just for like hockey reasons, like just in reading about, he's just a phenomenal hockey mind. And I think he really put his money where his mouth is on the ice by being a phenomenal backstop for all those teams. And, maybe I also chose it because it was, a lot of Red Wing teams tried to beat him and they couldn't. So maybe this is if you can't beat him, sign him to your team so you never have to play him again. So yeah, Kenny Dryden, what about you?
All right, I am going to go with Dominik Hasek.
Ooh.
Because like I said, I am going for what I think would be a super fun team to play with, a very entertaining team. And for my money, I can't think of one goalie that was both as entertaining and as talented as Hasek. So he's going to be my choice.
That's very nice.
All right, so for defense, let's just go both defensemen, right? So we don't have to worry about left and right. All right, so who are your defensemen? Who's your defensive core here, your defensive pair?
Bobby Orr and Nick Lidström. Game over.
You know what's going to be fun? You know what's going to be fun? That's exactly what I had.
That's awesome.
But here's the thing. Like once we get to the forwards, I know we're going to have, or I imagine we're going to have some differences. So for you, why did you go with those two? What was your reasoning here?
I like, and then we could probably talk about this on a later podcast as well, but like I feel like Orr and Lidström, I like Orr's tenure, like ability to play as a player is criminally short. I mean, he was able to accomplish so much in the short time that he was able to play, but like had actual conventional appropriate knee surgeries been available, like I think his longevity would have been, you know, comparable to say a Lidström's, just cause he's, you know, you just speed, handling, goal scoring, defense. I mean, Orr was really great. So, and what's funny is then I'm like, okay, so Lidström is what Orr would have been if Orr was allowed to play a lot longer. And I just felt like if you had those two able to be on the ice at the same time, that's great. Because then you talk about Lidström, who one of the most defensively responsible human beings on the planet. Again, when we're talking about shots from the point, like, you know, what? Ovechkin and Hull, yeah, they're, like, really good at their slap shots from the circles, right? I mean, you can be good at that. I mean, that's what Ovechkin's made his money on, right? But I, in the history of me making crazy what-if teams, I always need somebody who can just crank it from the blue line. Just, and who can thread the needle, who can wait for stuff. I mean, granted, you can't do that with everybody because I like to think that a chunk of Lidström's goals would have actually been his had it not been for Tomas Holmstrom, but some of those shots are going wide, right? Going wide. Mm. So, yeah. I feel like Lidström is, for me, and you know, Shea Weber, sure, Subban a little bit, but I think for me, my favorite guy who was just, you know, hey, if you got the rotation of coverage right, just right. I mean, this was perfectly exemplified in the 2008 Cup Finals. Just Lidström would just get these like phenomenal passes from Rafalski, and then he'd maybe stutter for like a second just to like wait to get that little extra space, and then rip it, and then it's in the back of the net. And like, I need that. And then you have the speed and grace of Orr. I love it. Why did you choose the same people as me?
Well. So like I said, I'm choosing a team that I think would be fun to play, would be super entertaining. At the same time, I want to be entertaining and I want to win. So with Hasek, obviously he's going to make some unbelievable saves, but he's also going to find himself out of position sometimes.
Yeah, he's kind of leaky.
Sometimes maybe even on the other side of the red line. So what I was looking for is two different type of defensemen. Number one, like I said, I want to be entertaining. I want a defenseman that can move the puck, that I don't have to worry about being able to get out of the zone. And so that's why I went with Orr. You know, because, you know, for me, he's that prototypical punk movie defenseman, you know, carry it out, get it out. Now, Lidström, he can do that too. I mean, he can move the puck. You know, he's very smart. He's always in position. But he's going to be kind of, you know, that defensive rock too. So if Orr goes and he gets caught, if Hasek is, you know, trying to take the mask off of the other goaltender. You know, Lidstrom's back there. He's going to be in position. He's going to be ready to go. Especially since, as we're going to see in a little bit, my forwards, it's not that they're not, like, terrible at defense, but they're not, like, the stereotypical two-way forwards. So I'm going to need some type of defensive solid rock back there. And for my money, it's the perfect human. So that's going to be for me. Now, let's see. Let's do center next. All right, so who do you got?
This is hands down. This has been decided for ever since I became a hockey fan. Pavel Datsyuk. This is not a discussion. This is not he's the maverick of faceoffs. He's got the skill set that makes most CIA and KGB agents cry and fold into the fetal position because he's so skilled at what he does. And his delightfully broken English, his poise, and he always has that air of he knows way more than you do, right? Like, to even entertain playing against you is merely because of the grace that he is bestowing upon you. Think of it like what the king from 300. I am a generous god. That's what Pavel Datsyuk is. He's a generous god. He's letting you make an attempt to play against him. And it's really just kind of like, oh, okay, so this is fun. Ooh, I see what you tried to do there. You tried to, you know, take the puck away from me, but no, it's mine. I am score. So, yeah, it's Pavel. It is. What about you?
All right. So, in addition to having a, like I said before, like an entertaining kind of bent to my team, I also have a streak going through where it's players that didn't get to play in the NHL as much as I would have liked to seen them. And, you know, you had Hasek back there. Obviously, Lidstrom played for a long time, like you said before, or, you know, didn't have as long a career as he could have. And so for me, for center, it was tough because, I mean, you know, if you're talking about the greatest center, I mean, it's kind of hard to not choose Gretzky. But for me, I chose Mario Lemieux because, like I said, my forward line especially is made up of players that were just absolutely dominant but never got the chance to have the long career that some of these other players had. And just being able to play together with these three forwards I'm going to choose in their prime, I think that would be a lot of fun. So like I said, I went with Lemieux. There's, I don't know, 20, 30 centers you could choose from that are all going to be pretty amazing choices, you know?
Yeah, very, very true.
Okay, so all right, so let's go with wing one. Left wing, right wing, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
One of your wingers.
My left winger is Paul Kariya. The theme I was going for with my team is, like, speed, finesse, goal scoring. I think one of the greater hockey moments ever was Kariya getting leveled but then still scoring a goal in that series, which they should have won that year, but, you know, New Jersey signed their deal with the Devil. The Devils signed a deal with themselves. Anyways, so
it's Devils all the way down.
So the and again, there's especially with him and Solani getting into the Hall of Fame later this year. I was rewatching a bunch of the footage of them recently, and there's just something about the way that the size and the speed and how Kariya handles themselves. And he just looks so good in the original Duck jerseys. Like, it's maddening that they went away from those, but I digress. I just think Korea's got amazing legs, amazing speed, great vision, and, the motive I have for my forward lineup is pummel them with skill and speed, and then, you know, like you said, with the same thing you had, you know, hey, if you're going to have a if you're gonna have a Sonic and Tails front scheme, you need to have something to rely on, which is having at least the dependable defense. So, yes, Paul Kariya is my left winger. What about you?
For me, I chose two players to play right wing. Ooh. So okay. One of them's gonna have to switch. I think either one could handle it.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll rotate through. But I'm gonna choose the one that's most like yours, and that is Pavel Bure. because just like Korea, like I think we chose very similar type players. I mean, Bure was not to take anything away from Korea, but I mean, Bure was, you know, if you ever got a chance to watch him in his prime, just the incredibly fast with the puck, unbelievably so, and you know, he could do moves that just blew your mind. And like I, you know, same thing with Lemieux. Bure didn't play nearly as much as he could have. Well, same with Korea too, you know. So I think watching, you know, being able to play with Pavel Bure is, you know, definitely one of my favorite experiences in past video games. And so I think I'd like to be able to have that again. You know, and plus he's fast. He can get back on defense because I'm controlling. So,
yeah.
So I can use his speed to come back and try to catch Korea on a breakaway.
Yeah.
So that's one of my wings. So last player. All right. So who's your last guy?
You literally just said him, Pavel Bure. Korea and Bure are my wingers. The Pavel Datsyuk. When we were playing the beta, remember when we were talking about how Connor McDavid has the legs of the Greek god of Hermes?
Yeah.
I want two Hermes on my team.
Would that be Hermi?
Hermeses? Yeah, no, it'd be. What is the plural? We'll figure that out later. But yeah, I just the idea of, you know, it's funny because I always like to tie stuff back to movies. I recently rewatched The Hunt for Red October, and one of the driving plot points was how the Russians had hyper-accurate surveys of the ocean floor so that they could do speed runs through the Laurentian Abyss or through Thor's Twins, and just this massive thing. And just the whole idea of, like, having, like, imagine, like, the Russian/German efficiency mentality focused on trying to run a giant submarine through an underwater canyon at, like, the highest speed possible. And then I was thinking, like, what if you do that but with hockey players? Like, what they do is they just focus on just completely destroying you with these, with not only speed, but, like, hyper-accurate passing and the ability to just completely catch everybody flat-footed. Because what we need is you have Pavel basically dangling the carrot, right? And then their entire defense in four quarters is like, wait a minute, Pavel has the puck right now, but where's Bure, where's Korea, right? So then they have to worry about where he's going to send the thing to. It's much like the Raptor mentality. Then, you know, you're focused on one, then the two you didn't even know were there, right? So Pavel's going to completely undress you. And then they're thinking like, well, at least you only took care of. And then you look, and Korea and Bure have completely shaken off their coverage. And Pavel, because of the magnificent passer that he is able to do tape to tape. And all of a sudden, you're down by six. So, yeah, those are my wingers. What about you?
Well, I think I might have to call an audible here, and I might have to go with Courtney B. Vance as Seaman Jones.
Nice.
Because he was the only one capable of tracking the Russian speedsters.
Let me get this straight, Jonesy. $40 million machine tells you you're listening to a whale and you don't believe it? Relax, Jonesy. You sold me.
Okay, but
yeah.
In all seriousness,
back to business. Yeah.
Yeah. My other winger, again, fits the same mold of my previous forwards. Dominance, unbelievably dominant, career cut incredibly short, and I am going to go with Mike Bossy.
Ooh. See, I was kind of on the fence about him, but I'm glad he did make one of ours, because he, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Just talk, please. Talk
I mean, like, for any of our listeners, you know, I've said a few times before, you know, I grew up an Islanders fan, so, you know, I grew up watching old videos of Mike Bossy. But if you haven't had a chance, you know, go on YouTube, because he's just unbelievable. He's if not the, he's one of the best, just pure goal scorers, just amazing shot. He could score from anywhere. He could score so many different ways. And unfortunately, you know, he just got cross-checked in the back over and over and over and over again. I mean, it's pretty similar to Lemieux. You know, people obviously Lemieux had other you know, health issues. But with Lemieux, like people were taking liberties with him in a way that they weren't allowed to with Gretzky. And not to take anything away from Gretzky, I mean, obviously he's a phenomenal player and he deserved to score a ton of points, but the way that he was treated compared to the way some of these other players were treated, unfortunately, some of these players didn't last as long as they would have otherwise. But like I said, if you haven't had a chance to see Mike Bossy, you got to go back and watch. Just incredible, incredible skill, incredible talent, and it's scary to think of what he could have done if he had played, a reasonably full career.
Yeah, and that's where, I think that's one of the. I think this is basically just a giant discussion about like the whole reason Rocky Balboa was ever made, because one guy sees a video game and they're like, "Oh, I played video game Rocky and I lost. Well, I need to be old Rocky in real life to assert my dominance." But you're looking at all these players that are phenomenally gifted, but it's just cut too short. Now, granted, most of these guys are in the Hall of Fame. It's not like they lost out on anything, right? Like they're
right.
They are like they've earned their just rewards, but when you think about how either the game was policed or managed in light of their stars, it's just a depressing amount of what ifs. Just too depressing to count. And but like hey, better to have loved and lost than not lost at all, and maybe not apply that to like feeling in your lower extremities or your head or something. But Bossy was exactly as you said. And the other thing is he's the type of player that is one of my favorites that I think unfortunately is getting buried underneath the current landscape of the game because all the nets are too small or the pads are too big. But, Bossy was a sniper. Like there's something about like being able to, hit the apple off the head of these people. And again, go watch the video, folks. Pete is not wrong in his assessment of adding Bossy to the team. So
I am correct in my analysis. All right, speaking of being correct in their analysis, the Edmonton Oilers front office has done some analysis, and they have decided to make a very large bet on Leon Draisaitl, who is a center, but he played wing with Connor McDavid last year. So 6 weeks ago, they extended Connor McDavid for 8 years and $100 million, and now they have signed Draisaitl. He's 21. They've signed him to an 8-year contract, and the annual cap hit is $8.5 million. Right, last year, he scored 77 points, 8th best in the NHL. One of the things that people are saying is he played a lot of time with McDavid, which is true. He did play a lot of time with McDavid last year. He also scored 16 points in Edmonton's playoff run last year. And he's a player, he's one of the players that people were really keeping an eye on in the hockey community this summer, because many people felt that he was one of these top RFAs that was going to get a big deal. Nobody knew exactly how big. Once he was signed, people like David Pasternak, there's going to be movement on that front to get some of these other free agents signed. So a lot of people think that that's like the first domino to fall. All right, so Jay, we've had a couple days to process this giant contract, especially since it's August and not much else is happening. So yeah. It's not really a hot take because we've had time to cool off a little bit. So so what would you say your lukewarm take is?
A medium take?
Yeah, a medium take, sure.
Geez. I mean, I don't know. I think this tucks just under like it's a decent bet, but still 8 years, even at 21, so that puts you at 29 if you fill out the whole contract. And so let's say he plays the next 8 years in Edmonton and he's fine, right? Like I would be curious as to what sort of deal he would be able to net after that. I mean, it's really tough to evaluate these people, and I think the reason I'm kind of on the meh side is for a reason you stated, which was Listen, if I was playing with Connor McDavid, I'm sure I would look very attractive, right? I think that could be said about a lot of things. I mean, let's not discount McDavid's skill, and let's not discount Dreisaitl's skill too much. But, like, when you have the, like, if you start him out in one position, but then you think he can be better with someone else, it's like, yeah, other guys' styles can feed into another guy's style. And I don't know. Maybe I needed a little bit more time to see Dreisaitl by himself to be like, okay, sure, yeah, you have the thing, rather than like, okay, so you have like comparable skill sets that are, you know, magnified because you're playing with a competent winger or a competent center, right? So that's the only part that I'm mostly meh about. But, you know, I think Edmonton set themselves up decently with this one. I mean, the difference is here, what, McDavid was 8 years, $100 million. This one is 8 years, $68 million. So, and I haven't read too much. Are there any performance bonuses in Dreisaitl's?
Yeah, according to Cap Friendly, there is. Let's see. In 2021, you know, 2020 to 2021, there's going to be a $7 million signing bonus. Like, basically, it's going to be paid out as $7 million and $2 million base salary, so for a total of $9 million. Guessing that's lockout protection. Same thing in 2023. It's going to be the same thing: $7 million in signing bonus and $1 million in base salary. Other than that, every year is just going to be salary. Towards the end, the last 3 years, there he has a no-move clause, and then he has a modified no-trade clause, which is the player submits a 10-team trade list. So basically 10 teams that he would agree to be traded to. So nothing super crazy. I mean, that's, you know, you would expect there to be some type of no-trade protection in there. So not too surprising that's in there.
Yeah, so I think it's a good deal. You know, maybe not like the greatest, just because, again, these 8-year contracts just scare the bejesus out of me. Cause like, we don't like, for the high risk, high reward profession that hockey is, we all know this, like a lot of money to tie up on somebody for a lot of time. I mean, this is the same rationale behind, either the Abdelkader or there was another one, but like, I just feel like, when you're doing this whole max contract stuff, you know, I'm of the mind of you obviously play to your worth and whatnot, but like, I don't know, okay, McDavid's gonna make 12.5, and then Dreisaitl's gonna make 8.5, right? Like, oh my God, what is that gonna do to these people? What is that gonna do to these people, right? Like, you tell me that I would make $8.5 million over 2 years. I'm already talking about what part of Maine I'm going to retire to, right? Like, but you know, again, obviously there's taxes, there's stuff, there's cars they want to buy, houses they want to build, the family members they need to pay off so they don't reveal that they're actually 10 corgis in a trench coat, right? So
yeah,
it's at the end of the day, it is a good deal, but let's not forget that it is an absurd amount of money with both of them locked up. That's, what is it? $21 million between them and McDavid now, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Okay. So what, and the team has only just returned to the playoffs, right? Like, how, where is all this money coming from? How are you able to do this? So I'm good. I'm like, again, a medium take. What about you?
I think in my opinion, this is a relatively high risk, maybe high reward gamble by Edmonton, because if they are right that he is going to be the Malkin to McDavid's Crosby, that's what they're hoping for. I said before that he put up pretty good numbers in the playoffs last year. Was it 16 points last year in the playoffs. And last year in the playoffs, he was playing away from McDavid. You know, last year he was playing with them a lot. The year before, he put up a higher rate of points per 60 at 5-on-5 than he did last year. And if you remember, McDavid was injured for like half the season, or pretty close to half the season. The other thing, too, that I think, while I don't think you can throw out the idea that, you know, okay, he's playing with McDavid, obviously that's gonna have an impact. But there's a couple other, you know, there's another way to look at that too. Is I pulled up the goals against replacement list from last year, and number one is Connor McDavid. You know, he's far and away, he's eight points above Sidney Crosby, who's in second place for forwards. At forwards, Leon Draisaitl is number five, right? So you have McDavid first, then Crosby, then Kopitar, then Wheeler, then Draisaitl. Okay, but so obviously you can say, oh well, you know, he's up there, McDavid's up there, he's so high. Well, that's, you know, again, not to say that there's nothing there. Of course there is, but if you look at Crosby, right, you would say, okay, Crosby's an amazing player. You put me on a line with Crosby, and I'm going to score a ton of points, right? So whatever. Scrolling down for Pittsburgh, the next forward isn't until number 26, and that's Malkin, right? The next, and so Malkin and Crosby don't play together very much. I mean, they play together on the power play. They, you know, they don't play together that much on even strength. The next one down is Hornquist. So if you're looking for like Crosby's wingers, you got to keep going. You got to keep going. You got Connor Sheary comes in at 38th. You know, so obviously, you know, Crosby's the same type of player as McDavid is in that, you know, he does a lot in his own, but he makes the players around him, you know, that much better. That's why, you know, we refer to him as, you know, this generational player.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that there's nothing to be said for Draisaitl, you know, kind of mooching off of McDavid. But at the same time, I do think there's enough there to say that you can make a pretty good argument that it's at least likely that he can put up pretty close to those same type of points, or at least in the same neighborhood, if he's playing on his own line next year. Now, the problem is going to be the rest of the team. Because, and this is the thing, it's like, you know, last year people were giving Chiarelli a lot of credits, you know, because the Oilers made the playoffs. And it was basically, they made the playoffs because of McDavid and Cam Talbot, and then obviously, with Draisaitl, you know, playing very well as well. He didn't do all this crazy stuff to make this team better. You know, he signed Milan Lucic for $6 million. You know, so I think when people are making the, you know, people are voicing the opinion, which is 100% valid, that when you add these two contracts on, it really is going to cramp up their cap space. I don't think Draisaitl's contract is going to be the problem. I think it's going to be these other ones. I think it's going to be Lucic at $6 million. Andre, I think Sekera is how he wants to be, you know, be called now. He's at $5.5 million. You got Nugent Hopkins at $6 million. You know, so could it be an overpay? Absolutely, sure. But I think there is a good – from what I've seen, I think there's a good chance. Like, I can see why they made this bet that – Draisaitl could be, like I said, the 1A center, and they could have a Crosby-Malkin scenario. And we've seen how well that works out for Pittsburgh. You know, you can, you know, kind of load them up with cheaper wings, although they do have Lucic. You got to find a spot for him. But, you know, I mean, it's worked well for Pittsburgh. I think it could work well for them. Obviously, on the back end, like we talked about before, you know, Cam Talbot, he had a much, much better year last year. He showed that he definitely has promise. He definitely has potential, you know, to be a Stanley Cup-winning goalie. But, you know, it's going to take more than one season, you know, more than one good season to you know, kind of cement him in there. And on the back line, I mean, they do have some good defense. You know, they got Klefbom, you know, Larson, obviously not worth Taylor Hall, but, you know, he's a pretty good defenseman. And I think that if they could kind of build around those guys and jettison, you know, find a way to maybe get out from under some of these other contracts, they'd have room to bring in, you know, some better supporting players. But we'll see. I mean, there's rumors that Nugent Hopkins is going to be the next first Edmonton first pick on his way out.
Yeah, we're gonna have one of those where are they now specials. Yeah. I think that'd be pretty cool. Like, this is your draft, and like this was the number one back. And where is he now? Like, oh, he's on a boat somewhere.
I mean, if you think about it, if they gave up Taylor Hall and they got Adam Larson. Maybe if they give up Nugent Hopkins, they can get Griffin Reinhart back. You never know.
You're right, Pete. You do never know.
For sure.
For sure. For sure.
For sure.
All right, Joining us this episode for our interview segment is Carolyn Wilkie. She is the director of social media for and contributor to Hockey Graphs. I remember the last article I read was your general manager series that was pretty interesting. I think we can definitely talk about that because there's some pretty interesting stuff in there. As well as a former managing editor for FanRag Sports NHL coverage. She left that position to work for a company that makes educational robot toys, which we are 100% talking about. but she still contributes to FanRag Sports. So, Carolyn, thanks a lot for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing really well. I'm not going to lie. I totally thought we were supposed to be recording at 6:30, which we are doing. But we'd totally agreed on 6, and I woke up from a nap at 5:45, and I was like, oh, thank God, I've got 45 minutes to wake up before we do this podcast. So, I hope I give a good interview here, but I'm making no promises.
I'm sure you're going to be good. I mean, worst case, we talked to Garrett last week. I can just recycle some of that and change the pitch or whatever. I don't think anybody will notice.
Right.
I mean, if any of this stuff becomes too hard, like we said, the softball robot toys questions will just be in full force. So
I've only been working there for a week, so that might even not be as softball as you think.
Okay, great. All right. We're all on a fun line change here. Let's do this.
All right, so how about to start off, like I said, we'll give you a little warm-up question here. So how did you get into hockey? I mean, I know you follow Dallas from what I remember. So, how did you get into hockey? How did you become a fan of Dallas? Kind of take us through that journey.
So I greatly enjoyed live hockey well before I got really, really into it. So when I was living in Texas, I lived only about 3 miles from the AHL team where they played, so it was cheap to get tickets, really easy to get to, and so I would go up there probably 2 or 3 times a season to see a game, and it was really fun, but I wasn't like into hockey. I never watched on TV or anything like that, but what really changed is I got into soccer, and as you two can tell and people probably guessed from my Twitter pictures, I have pretty bad eyesight, and part of why I never got into hockey was it was actually kind of hard for me to follow because I could never figure out where the puck was, and if you can't figure out what's going on, why would you care about the game? But I got into soccer, and soccer actually has a very similar flow to it. Well, obviously, the rules are different, and there's some differences in the way it's played, but for the most part, when you're going free-flowing action, you're got very, very similar attacking styles and defensive styles as far as what's considered. And I could start following and anticipating what was happening in soccer. And then when I started to watch a little bit of hockey, then I could find that it kind of translated. And I really, honestly, I kind of got into hockey at one point because my soccer team was doing really poorly. And I was just like, I'm angry. I want something to cheer about. And so I was like, a girlfriend of mine was a big hockey fan, and I was like, you, tell me about hockey. And that's how I got into hockey.
So, Carolyn, before we get into, a serious thing, I just want to ask you, as a Stars fan, how are you recovering with the current jersey design? It was a little touch and go there for a while. It was kind of the same for a while, but then you went into a cow uterus phase, and then you went into a I'm just a star with my name above me now, and now you've kind of went into this, I don't know if lime green is the, is
it
what?
It's victory green, and it's not actually lime green.
Okay, so.
It's actually got a lot of blue in it.
All right.
It only looks yellow when you're seeing the reproductive, reproduction jerseys.
That's my fault. That's a Freudian slip. That's my fault. So we're all adults here. We all know.
Well, Yeah. I feel like the Mooters jerseys, which are there's a burgeoning segment of ironic Dallas Stars fans that are all Mooters all the time. but yeah, no, I love actually the victory green. I look great in it. That is my color. So
yeah, I gotta say, in terms of like logo rehash, because I mean, I always, again, growing up and then watching the Mighty Ducks and Mike Modano and stuff, and embarrassing Marty Turco all the time. The A as the top spoke of the star, like, it's just, it was a very clean look, but I was, you know, a little wary about the redesign, but I think with the stylized D inside of the star, I think you've leveled off. I think you're in the clear now, so.
Yeah, I really like it. I really like it. It's got good contrast, and then the silver detailing is really, really nice. I really like it. I'm not, like, a fan of how the Adidas jerseys look. They did, some really weird stuff to the neckline. So, like, the Stars are still one of the few teams that kept their laces, but, like, the laces are now, like, another, like, 2 inches down. Like, they're, like, a deep V of laces, but there's still, like, all that, like, illusion netting. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah.
So I'm not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, all those new Adidas ones, they have, like, kind of a new waffle board program on pattern on the shoulders too, and I'm very curious to see how that actually looks and plays out. So, but I'm glad that was my burning question, because again, we all are proud to wear our team's colors and stuff, and you know, when you have a team that has a crisis of conscience over a decade, you know, it's nice to be out of the woods. So, Peter, can you ask a question that has, like, bearing on this?
Sure. Yeah. I'm gonna pull a question from our mailbag. It's interesting. It's from JJ. He actually asked the same question to Garrett Hole, because he finds this question fascinating, which I do as well. So that's why I'm picking it. So
me too. Don't leave me out.
Sorry. All right. So the question is basically this. You know, how is your work on the analytical side of hockey changed or affected either your fandom, like the way you watch the game as a fan, the way you interact with the game, you know, like, so you know, how has it changed?
I'm certainly more critical now than I was when I started, and I mean, the part of that is because I know more about the game, and not just analytics, but I got into analytics pretty quick as a hockey fan. Like, I think there was only, like, maybe a year where I wasn't concerned about it. So it really has shaped how I watch the game, and especially has really helped me notice a lot of the smaller details just based on tracking and following things along like that. But yeah, definitely has made me more critical, and because I think there's a lot of, I mean, obviously in hockey there's a lot of moving parts, but I think there are some things, especially from the front office perspective, which is where I've kind of dedicated my studies in hockey analytics, that are just easy to get right, and it's obvious that there are gaps there that aren't being, you know, taken advantage of. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't quite get it. So it's one of the, like, that's where, you know, as a person who values logic highly, when I see front offices do things that I find illogical, then I'm a lot more critical about it. And I like having the evidence to prove that, you know, kind of more of a I'm right situation. And, you know, I definitely tend not to take things at face value, as opposed to a more casual fan generally would. Because there's no point in a casual fan not taking something at face value. You know what I mean? Like, part of I'm a very casual soccer fan. Like, I love my team, but I do kind of follow the stats a little bit. Like, I've done some of the reading, but, like, I don't work in the soccer stat world ever. And so it's one of those things where it's like, if a stat likes my team, that's a good stat. If a stat doesn't like my team, well, it's clearly biased and I hate it. Like, and it's just more fun to approach soccer that way. And I feel like I totally get it when fans are like, ugh, analytics, all you're doing is trying to take the fun out of the game. Because it is kind of taking the fun out of the game. It does make me more critical, but I also like being right. So I guess there's that.
That's the biggest part, folks. Lest we forget. That's the moral of the story. It's about being right.
There is a right and wrong in hockey. No, that's not true.
I mean, I will say, as a current Red Wings fan and a former Islander fan, I'm not used to this whole idea of the management making bad decisions. I'm not sure how that works, but I can try to imagine. I can try to imagine.
Did you see that great quote from Brian Murray on the best trade he ever made?
I don't think so.
Oh, man, I read about this. It was about the Luongo stuff, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man, Pete. Oh, jeez. Like, It's like, I don't know what it, the paragraph, I think, is what, 10 sentences, but
yeah.
It basically just skewers Mike Bilderry
as, oh, like, man.
as the Isles GM from back in the day. And it's like Brian Murray ethered Mike Bilderry from the grave.
Yeah, they shared it. Like, it was like the day after or the day of they said he passed, and they're passing around this story. I'm like, oh, please tell me he had that, like, in a memo somewhere. Like, when he passes, all of a sudden everybody got this email from a ghost server somewhere. Like, here are the things to say upon my departure from this earth. And, man. He just
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I'm going to print that out, and I'm going to read it before I go to bed every night, just like Arya with her list.
Okay. Okay, all right, so let me, I have it right here. I'm going to read it to you, Pete, and I need your real-time reaction to it. So this is from Brian Murray, for all you folks out there. Quote, I got Luongo and Jokinen for Parrish and Oleg Kavasha. It was an innocent start to the deal. I called Islanders GM. Now, what's funny is in the way this quote is constructed, they have brackets on Islanders GM, but I actually just visually see it as finger quotes, like... Alleged Islanders GM Mike Milbury. I called Islanders GM Mike Milbury and said, I need a third goalie for my minor league team. And we talked. It was a day before the draft. And he said, well, what about Luongo? Well, we love Luongo, but I said, I don't know if I want him. What about Steve Valiquette? He said, no. And then asked about a young guy that he drafted that year, Rick DiPietro. I said, if you get him, you'll never lose a game. And it kind of went back and forth. At the end, I hung up the phone and said, I can't effing believe this. Mike Milbury wants to trade Luongo and Ole Jokinen. Jokinen had some issues in L.A., but it looked like he was going to be a player, and I know that's probably as good as a deal I've ever done.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, God, that's amazing.
Oh, man. See, like, that's the type of thing. So for all the fans that showed up to the Cup Finals here with the Mike Milbury has to go signs, I will now show up to next year's Cup Finals with that quote on poster board and hold it above and like, you know, everybody prints out tweets now and they're like, oh yeah, this guy did this. Oh, it's perfect.
I mean, he still has a job, like, in hockey. Like, he has a job telling people what to think about hockey, and he made that trade.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's why I like analytics.
Speaking of analytics, which is exactly the reason why we're talking about this, I want to ask this next question, Pete. So, given the way analytics define and measure where everybody's going, we have a question from the Grand Moff Larkin, and he's just wondering, who do you think most improved by their moves, and who's going to be hurt by their moves / departures? Is there a front runner? Like, what do you think?
From this off season?
Yeah.
I think the obvious hurt are both the Capitals and the Blackhawks. I mean, the Blackhawks especially. Mm. The Capitals have enough raw talent that, yes, what's hurting them is they lost basically their entire second line. Like, the way they're having to reconfigure things is their second line from last year, which was helped make them so dangerous, is gone. And so now they're having to reconfigure their forward core. And then, of course, losing Nate Schmidt, who probably should have been better than a third pairing defenseman for them and was likely to be better than a third pairing defenseman for them this year, means that they're kind of in the lurch there too, and they're probably going to again have to over rely on a guy like Brooks Orpik. So they're pretty rough off as far as losing talent, but they still have Ovechkin, they still have Backstrom. TJ Oshie is still going to be probably pretty good next year. Like, I mean, his contract is ridiculous, but he's going to be pretty good next year. Kuznetsov is ridiculous. You know, again, his contract's probably too high, but he's, again, going to be ridiculous probably for the next 2 or 3 years. So they've still got plenty of talent. I'm excited to see what Jacob Brana can do in the NHL. Andre Burakovsky looks like he could break out next year, so that could definitely help from the Capitals' perspective. But I have no goddamn clue what the Blackhawks are about right now. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm actually a very big fan of Brandon Saad, and I was so upset when they traded him to Columbus, because I think he is a very underrated player, especially defensively. So I'm a huge Brandon Saad fan, and I really actually was, like, upset at Blue Jackets fans last year because they were extremely critical of him, even though he posted a career high in points, whatever. So I like that they got him back, But the how they got him back by trading Artemi Panarin is just ridiculous. And then to top that off with swapping Nicholas Hjalmarsson for Connor Murphy, like, I just don't get it. I don't see the game plan. And I have a hard time feeling that their talent that they do have, because, again, they do have some talented players still, and, again, Saad will help, is going to prove out to be enough, like I suspect the Capitals' talent will be. Of course, I say this, and I have said this in multiple places and written it down, like there is proof that I don't believe the Blackhawks will be good next year. So, therefore, they are obviously going to be good next year.
It's the reverse jinx.
Well, and I think the other thing about the Blackhawks that no one is really focused in on is there's a weird situation developing for their number two goalie. So not only did they get Saad from the Blue Jackets, they got a guy who I actually am a big fan of, Anton Forsberg. And he was had been a goalie in their AHL team, Cleveland Monsters. And he had been a large part of helping build up to that Calder Cup run. And I can't remember if it was him or somebody else in net for the actual winning game, but he was a large part of that run. And he has a very good AHL stats, but hasn't really, he's got, I think, one NHL game. But he's a very promising goalie. And so I thought he was a really great add. But then, over the summer, after the Vegas expansion draft, they added JF Berube on a one-way contract for just over league minimum, something like $750, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so that seems to indicate that Forsberg is going to be the guy in Rockford, but he's clearly a good goalie and probably deserves a shot at being number two. And Berube is already, like, he's not on a two-way. And, yes, they bury his entire cap hit, so it's not a cap concern, really. But, like, he's already had that three-goalie tandem experience and spoken out about it, and how much is he really going to want to play in Rockford. So that's going to be very odd. And they've been very, very lucky to have two very reliable guys who are now starters, you know, in Antti Raanta and Scott Darling, take over from Corey Crawford when there's been an issue or something like that. And I just don't have the same confidence that Forsberg or Berube could have that same kind of effect on the team. And I think, I mean, Crawford is a really, really good goalie. So in number one, they're totally going to be fine. But if something goes wrong, then they may have another issue.
Yeah. Speaking of goalies, I have one more question before we get to, we have a quick fun game we're going to play at the end. It's another mailbag question. Rar Par. I never know how to pronounce that, so if you're listening and I mispronounce it, I'm sorry. It's basically raw paw with an R at the end of each half. Anyway, the question is, does Bishop get the Stars back into playoff contention? You know, 2 years ago, top in the West. Last year, not so much. You know, they've had, obviously, goaltending has been a big problem for them for a long time. So do you think Bishop is going to be the answer, or do you think it's going to be a move that ends up not working out the way that they want it to?
The Stars would be back in playoff contention with or without Bishop. That's
whoa!
The reason that they were not in contention last year had nothing to do with goaltending. It was that 90% of their forwards were injured. That's an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. But they literally had two players for most of their year that were in the top nine or top six last year. Two. That was Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. In fact, it was Tyler Seguin's first 82-game season with Dallas. So you're talking about Jamie Benn spending significant amount of time centered by Cody Eakin and playing alongside Lauri Korpikoski. people just don't understand how badly the Stars. Alex Hemsky played 12 games. Matthias Janmark played none. Matthias Janmark was Spezza's right wing or left wing last year. Like, is there so you're they completely the forward core were completely wiped out. They made some the other major issue, and this is something that hasn't been resolved but will be, was how the defense was structured. And if there's one thing I can count on Ken Hitchcock for, it is to structure a defense. And last season, the Stars had, and going into this season too, the Stars had nine NHL-ready or NHL-viable defensemen. Part of what happened is that Julius Honka got held back in the AHL because he was waiver-exempt. He should have been in the NHL. He's going to be in the NHL next year. He's fantastic. And then, but then Lindy Ruff had a weird rotation going on the third pair where guys were being afraid of being scratched because if they made one mistake, they would get scratched because there were two other people who could take their spot. So I have a very, very distinct feeling that this season will be very different defensively, not just in structure, but in how guys are going to be given spots. And yes, they'll be expected to play up to that, but I have a feeling there's going to be a lot less churn, which is good for everybody, especially when you're trying to have structure. So assuming we don't have the same injury troubles as last year, which is a fair assumption because they were ridiculous, then the Stars would be better with or without Bishop. Now, I don't find Bishop to be a particularly fantastic goalie, but I certainly think he's a league average goalie, and that's all I really care about. So I think the difference is that, yes, the Stars would be playoff contenders, even if they had their same duo of Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi. Do I think they'd be cup contenders? Probably not. But with a league average goalie, plus the offense that they can generate, plus a structured defense, I think they have as good of a shot as the Penguins or, you know, the Predators, the other big names, because Bishop is at least better than what we've had. And if you keep the other things the same, that's really good.
All right. So we're going to close this out with a little game. We played this with the first time with Dan Saraceni from Lighthouse Hockey. So he had the Islander version. We forgot to play it last time with Garrett. But Jay and I both grew up as very big Conan O'Brien fans. And so when we started this podcast, we said we need to have a segment called In the Year 2000. Who cares what it's about? We need, you know, we'll figure that part out later. So we decided it would be a fun little game to play with our guests. So basically, Jay and I have in front of us the 1999-2000 Dallas Stars.
Oh no!
top scorers. Now the game. Now the game is very simple. We're looking for the top 10. So basically, if you get a name and it's in the top 10, you get a point, right? So you can get 10 points that way. You can also, if you want, you can gamble, and let's say you're like, I know, or I think I know who the number one scorer was, right? So you can guess, and if you're right, you get 3 points. But if you're, so it's a gamble, but if you're wrong, even if they're in the top 10, you don't get that point, so you kind of throw that point away. So the high score so far is 6. Theoretically, there's 30 possible points, although that would be like insane. I can't imagine anybody doing that. So yeah,
well,
so this is the 1999.
We do it next week, and then someone gets it. We're like, well, we have to come up with a new game.
Oh my god! So let me preface this with, I didn't start watching hockey until 2013.
Oh, perfect.
Okay,
this is great. That means so many shot in the dark questions.
I have like
more excited for this.
I have like. Two people that I know were on the 99 team that won the Stanley Cup. And so I'm like, I'm going to go with Mike Modano being in the top 10.
You are correct. That's one.
He was number one, right?
He was number one, yeah.
I should have gambled. I knew I had the one shot and I didn't take it.
He came in first by 22 points, which is pretty impressive.
Which is probably why they didn't win the Stanley Cup in 2000.
Yeah.
Is Hull on there?
That's correct. I was gonna say you had referenced the Stanley Cup, right? So
I'm like, I know two people on that team, and I just did it.
and by the way, basically you get 3 strikes, right? So if you 3 wrong guesses and the game's over. Here's a hint: there are 4 defensemen in the top 10, which is interesting.
Zubov.
That's correct. Zubov was number 3.
Thank you, Aaron, and how much you campaigned for him to make the Hall of Fame. is Lehtinen in there, or is that not his time frame?
He is not.
It is his time frame, but he's not in the 10.
Okay.
It's pretty funny because, like, you get to Brett Hull on this list, and then it's like, Mike Modano was like, hold my beer. Like, Brett Hull was probably like feeling pretty confident. And then Modano was like, hey, what's that over there? A squirrel? And then he just pulls everybody out of the water.
Is Brendan Morrow already on the team?
Yes, that is another one. He is number eight. He is number eight. So far you are...
Be good about myself right now.
So far you got four correct. You only got one wrong, so you still get two more incorrect ones. And I will say there's a couple... There's a couple pretty big names on here.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
It's not like when we were playing with Dan and it was like Mariusz Czerkowski was number one and like half the names nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, no, but the thing is I'm like honestly, I'm such not a trivia person as far as like knowing rosters back and forth unless I've been like in the mix of it. So, yeah, I'm going to just cash in. I'm good. I can't even think of anybody.
Okay. All right. I one of them I'm pretty sure was drafted the same year as I think it was like Keith Primo. I'm trying to remember. Like, there's a lot of crazy players in this draft. It was Darian Hatcher was number 10. I remember he was a first-round draft pick just because I used to collect hockey cards, and I remember his rookie card, you know, his draft year. But anyway, so all right, so here we go down the list just real quick. Modano, Hull, Zuboff, you got those. Number four was Jamie Langenbrunner.
Oh, duh.
Number five, Joe Nieuwendyk.
Also a duh.
Yeah. Six, Mike Keane.
I wouldn't have
seven, Daryl Sador was number seven. You got Brendan Morrow at number eight. Number nine, Richard Matvichuk, one of the all-time classic names. Matvichuk, I don't know, it's just fun to say. It's almost like Matlock.
It rolls off the tongue.
Exactly. And then number 10 was Darian Hatcher.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I should have gotten at least two more of those, but I'm a bad
man. Okay. That's okay. I mean, this is, we are talking about going back 17 years, you know, so this is not...
I'm not that old.
Well, exactly. Neither are we.
Neither are we, yeah. We're all children in the eyes of the hockey gods. That's all
right.
So thank you so much for joining us tonight. So our guest again is Carolyn Wilkie. You can find her on Twitter at Classlicity. It's C-L-A-S-S, like class, L-I-C-I-T-Y. So follow her on Twitter. Check her out. She has a lot of good tweets on there. Now she's tweeting about, tiny homes or something?
God, I hate tiny house hunters. I hate them so much.
Wait, before we go, tell us the coolest thing about making educational robot toys. Just like,
oh my God, I can't believe I forgot.
You can take a second if you want, but what is, like, we were pretty sure that was going to overtake the conversation, but we actually stayed on topic. So first of all, I'm proud of us, but second of all, we can't let this gift horse run away just yet.
Not to, you know, use your podcast as an, you know, advertising or anything like product advertising, but it's so cool to play with tiny robots. So what we make these, what we call robot blocks, and they actually are, it's almost like kind of robot Legos or robot, you know, those, you know, Tinker Toys or something like that. Because basically what they are is they're little blocks, and each block has its own individual computer sense, but they all talk to each other. And so you can basically build towers of robots that do things. And it's really cool. We work a lot with teachers and working with STEM education and getting kids excited about robotics and science and math and just and design and engineering and sort of that sort of thing. And they work with, you know, pretty much every age range. Like we work with, you know, kids or the kids as young as four can play with them. And then, you know, I play with them. And so kind of, there's no real age range except to, you know, you can't swallow them. So that's your cutoff there, but they're just so cool. Like, and then like the first time I built my little robot at work, I was like, we have this one that like, you can chase it with your hand because it senses how far away your hand is. And then it just runs away from you if you've got the correct one with the block with the wheels on it. It's so cool.
So random question, can you construct an NHL defenseman out of these blocks?
And if so, can you deliver him to Little Caesars Arena
for next year? Well, you would need a lot of blocks. You know, I don't know if you could do, like, it would be a defensive defenseman. So, I mean, I'm going to caveat this. But you could use a motion sensor one that have good gap control.
Okay.
Because you can change one to actually follow you too. And so you could have a defensive defensemen will stick on their man out of tiny robot blocks. You'd need a lot of blocks. Be a little worried about, you know, IR.
Okay, well, we're going to, Pete and I, we're going to powwow about this. We're probably going to have to come up with, like, a Johnny Five scenario.
Johnny Five, he's alive.
Defenseman Five alive. Must close the lane. Finish the check. This is going to be great. All right. Well, I'm glad we asked that. That's phenomenal. So thank you for a greater insight into the world of the robot blocks. And I don't know, Pete, maybe, hey, if we don't have sponsorship in the next couple episodes, let's just leave Strauss Carolyn. Maybe we can get, like, an ad deal going on here. Like, hey, do you like robots? Do you like them doing things? Well, do we have the product for you? It's like South Park. Step one, get the robot blocks. Step two, step three, profit. There it is.
And of course, at the end, there's going to be like this disclaimer. You know, we're pretty sure these robots will not take over the world. We're pretty darn sure.
Yeah.
90% sure.
Exactly. All right, so yeah, so thank you so much for joining us. It was really fun.
Bye.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure. So, Jay, I've been thinking something. I've been thinking here, you know, listening to you talk, I've been thinking that life is like a line change, you know, here in Puck World. Signing contracts, shooting lanes, it's a puck blur. It's so weird. That reminds me, what does it remind you of? It's something.
Oh, Pete, I think it reminds me of a good song, a song you and I love and characterize and perform so well.
Oh, my God, you're talking about the song we just did. Here it is. Might solve a mystery
or rewrite history. Puck Tales Saloon. Every day they're out there making Puck Tales Saloon.
This is our new segment. It's called Puck Tales. And for this segment, each episode, one of us is going to regale the other person and our audience with a tale from hockey history, a puck tale, if you will. If you've ever seen the show Drunk History, then you have the basic idea. So this is like that without the alcohol. So today Jay is going to lead us off. And the story that Jay is going to tell us is about a hockey moment from 1956, and the headline was Phantom Sniper Fires Up Terrible Ted Lindsay. Now, Jay, as someone who was there, tell us what happened on this historic day.
Well, I got to tell you, Pete, as a first-person viewer of this event, it's probably the greatest thing my eyeballs will have ever committed to my memory. So just for a bit of a background here, the 1950 to 1956 stretch of NHL action for the playoffs was solely Detroit versus Toronto. If you ever wanted to see what a pre-Cold War Cold War was, that's what this is. Except the Red Wings took Toronto's lunch money every year, every year. It was probably more contentious than the Cuban Missile Crisis and World War II and one combined. So these are really big things, and you can look it up. That's all true. So the event specifically I want to talk about is when this rivalry kind of hit its apex, its vertices, its zenith, as it were. So the Leafs and the Red Wings are always meeting in the semifinals because, you know, they couldn't really beat each other for the cup because that was entirely Montreal's job. But at this point, things were like, you had so many things leading up to this. You had the Lusitania being sunk. You had the automobile being invented. So all of these events collided in this one series, because even along with that as well was Gordie Howe was hit badly into the boards prior to this series, like a year or two before, and his rugged Kirk Douglas looks were shadowed, and his face had to get reconstructed into basically a more handsome Matt Damon. So there's a lot of history leading up to this moment. So this is game 3 of the 1956 semifinals. Detroit was already up 2-0. And a couple nights earlier in game two, Gordie Howe actually laid out the most vicious and clean hit ever recorded in human history, knocking out Todd Sloan, the leading scorer for the Maple Leafs. And when that happened, both countries had their nuclear arsenals probably the most prepped that they've ever been. I didn't know Canada had nukes, but they had them. USA had nukes. This is the 50s, folks. Don't believe everything you read in the history books. So this critical game three happens. And prior to puck drop, some Canadian lunatic, and I know we all have our opinions about how Canadian people are, very nice, cordial, appreciative, non-threatening. Folks, this was the man who broke that mold, right? I mean, this is – you can't think – I'm trying to think of who the angriest Canadian ever was, and – gosh, I mean, maybe John Candy in a couple of episodes of SCTV, probably when he was the incredible
Farva.
Bulk. Farva, yep, Farva could be a good thing. But again, that's the angriest has been. So now you have this lunatic. So he called into a couple of radio shows and said that he was going to shoot Howe and Lindsay, that the Toronto faithful would not have to worry. So instead of bringing this man to justice, Toronto decided to let him maybe show up. Now, I don't know if all of you are familiar with this, but back in the day, hockey fans were trench coat wearing fedora sporting people, which means you could smuggle in a house. You could smuggle in a car. You could smuggle in a small brewery, which, again, we're talking about Canada here, which is probably what everybody did. And, you, again, look it up. It's true. And so the chances of a Yahoo actually bringing a firearm to this Maple Leaf Gardens was higher than normal. So news of this actually reached Gordie Howe's mother, and she was really distraught. And Gordie Howe, being the upstanding Canadian that he is, decided to take matters into his own hands and actually plotted to overthrow the entire Canadian government. But Ted Lindsay, terrible Ted, actually had a better idea. So he actually was like, listen, I'll take care of this. So they went into game three, piping hot mad. It's actually one of the greatest other moments of this story. The Red Wings had to keep Howe and Lindsay off the ice for so long because they were so mad. The heat that their bodies were giving off was melting the ice. They would skate and there'd be divots. It was a mess. So there's a critical point in the game where the Red Wings were down 4-2, and then Gordie Howe scores to make it 4-3. Now, at this point, Terrible Ted decided to put his plan into action, and his plan was to actually tell the entire Red Wing team to stay on the bench. So he was the only guy on the ice. They told everybody to sit down, just one guy versus six Maple Leafs, right? And he goes on to score the game-tying goal to make it 4-4, which led them to overtime. And then Ted Lindsay, in the overtime period, scores the game-winning goal to win 5-4. And Gordie Howe was like, you know, that Ted Lindsay, he actually was pretty right in telling me to stay on the bench. You know, I probably could have gotten heated and done nothing that my mother would even respect me for. I'm glad I kept my cooler head on today. Wait a minute. Ted told us to stay on the bench. Ted's the only guy on the ice right now. Oh, no. And Gordie looks out on the ice. Ted Lindsay had inverted his stick at the end of the game and jokingly fired imaginary bullets into the crowd at Maple Leaf Gardens, thus imaginary murdering 15,000 people. And it's the greatest imaginary massacre ever. And the photo is immortalized in all of the Detroit sports papers. And he was quoted as saying, if there was one night that I wanted to score two or three goals, this was the night. So there you go. The Phantom Sniper was shot by the Phantom Bullets. And the nuclear arsenals were rolled back. And both nations have been at peace since. So that is the true 100% non-fictional story of that famous photo of Ted Lindsay aiming his stick into the crowd like a rifle. So that's the puck tale.
Woohoo. that's our first installment of Puck Tales. So every episode, you're going to get to learn a little bit about hockey history. I'm guessing you learned something from that. I know I did. So thank you very much for listening. Please make sure to subscribe. Give us a like on Apple Podcasts. I guess it's not iTunes anymore, Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at 200FootPod. That's 200FTPOD. You could follow me at PFlynnHockey. And you can follow Jay at @TheRoarer_24, @TheRoarer_24. All right, so give us a follow, and we'll have some good stuff on there for you. So thanks a lot for listening. All that's left is for Jay to give us our traditional closing segment, which is the Doc Emmerich superlative of the episode. Jay, what do you got for us this time?
Oh, man, you know from the huge cache of verbs that he's used, I think today is appropriately, we really grabbed this one.
We grabbed
this podcast. He grabs it. Oh, he scores. So there you go, folks. That's your Doc Emmerich superlative of the day.
Enjoy the next 2 weeks. We'll be back at you 2 Mondays from now with another episode with a fantastic guest. We can't spoil it yet because it's not 100% confirmed, but you're going to like it a lot. So thanks a lot for listening.
Scores!
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Might solve a mystery. Or rewrite history.
Puck Tales Blues.
Every day they're out there making
Puck Tales Blues.